Okay, so we have been talking about Shemaya Ka'ona in general, and we got some foundations down. And now we have to integrate it back into our parak and into our daf, where it seems to be the topic. And how exactly does that work, and how do all the parts fit? So just to quickly recap the main points that we need to know. So we try to understand how Shemaya Ka'ona operates. And we saw that there are a couple of possibilities, and a lot of it was triggered by a machlokas somewhat recently about Birchas Kohanim, that the Beis Halevi maintained that Birchas Kohanim cannot be done through Shomei Ka'ona, ostensibly because it requires Kol Rom, and that seems to be a problem, apparently because it's an extra detail beyond pure speech, and Shomei Ka'ona can't work for that. And we understood that to mean that he was seeing the translation of Shomei Ka'ona as comparing actions. That the act of Shmia is equal to the act of speech. And therefore, yeah, speech is good, but for other things, no, so Kol Rom, not. And the Chazon Ish disagreed, and the Chazon Ish said, clearly that's not true, because we fulfill Kiddush through Shomei Ka'ona, and that requires a cup of wine. We don't have everyone holding their own cup. And we fulfill Megillah through Shomei Ka'ona, and that requires a Kashrut Megillah. We don't see everyone sitting there with a Kashrut Megillah. So, apparently, other conditions also come along. And therefore, we understood that to align with the idea that Shomei Ka'ona should be translated as HaShomea Kiha'ona, that the individual who is listening is compared to the individual who is speaking. And whatever that person is doing transfers over. And therefore, yes, other details can also come along. And there are other ramifications as well, as we saw. But that was the central point. And we also then traced what it could be based on within those two understandings, that if we're comparing action, Shmia is like speaking, so maybe that's an extension of the idea of Hirhor Kedibor, that thinking about something is also like speaking, at least according to some opinions, and that maybe this is one step beyond that. So you hear someone else, you think about it, and through that, you are Yotzei. While there were certain weaknesses with that theory, and perhaps it's a little bit smoother to work off the premise that it's like Shlichus. That Shlichus, you have a mitzvah that can be performed through someone else, and we had to explain that here, doesn't fit perfectly with Shlichus, because Shlichus ostensibly shouldn't work for a mitzvah that involves your body. Just like it doesn't work for Lulav, doesn't work for Matzah, shouldn't work for the act of speaking either. And if it was working through Shlichus, why do you need to be there? So we explained that, from the one hand, it's not necessarily actually Shlichus, it's something in the Parsha of Shlichus, something in the mode of Shlichus, the language of the Chassam Sofer and Achuva, which we'll mention more about today, that it is a Hitzdarfus Kain Shlichus. It's a kind of partnership that is similar to Shlichus, but has its own sources, doesn't have to match exactly. And we also took it a little bit further to say that really we could say it really is actual Shlichus, it's just broken up into two parts. That these mitzvahs of speech are generally composed of two elements, that really the goal is to hear yourself speak, and you speak so that you'll hear yourself. So since the goal is the hearing yourself, that is a mitzvah shebegufo that you have to be there for, but the speaking is really a means to an end so that you can delegate, and that delegation makes sense perhaps especially with some of the examples that we have, because Kiddush Megillah, there the actual language of the Psukim is about Zechira. Zachar is on the Shabbos Lekadsho. Hayamim Eilun is Karim Venasim. So the goal is really the thinking about it. And the speaking is a means to an end, so you can delegate that part. So that was the main essence of that. So far so good. Everybody with me? So to plug that into our Gemara, so what about Shomei Ka'ona and the Seder? And the primary mitzvah of Haggadah So does that work through Shemaya Kohen? So we have a few indications that it does. And from our Gemara and Kuftes Vavimid Beis, and also from a lot later, Adaf Kuftes Zayin in the Beis. So we have two Gemaras that both sound like they are invoking Shemaya Kohen. On the one hand, our daf that talks about the Omer Haggadah, who is the one who does the Akira Sashlochan, who lifts the table or whatever correlates to that nowadays. And whether everyone has to have matzah and marah in front of them, that was a machlokus in our Gemara, that maybe everyone has to have matzah and marah, or just the Omer Haggadah. And we mentioned one interpretation that this was the question of the Beis Halevi and the Chazon Ish, that the premise seems to be you have an Omer Haggadah who is being motzi everyone through Shomea Ka'ona, and therefore the question is, these extra props of matzah and marah, can that also just be by him because the other details can come along too? Or should we say, no, Shemei Kaona only works for speech, and anything beyond speech, you're going to need to have your own. So that Gemara sounds like it is invoking Shemei Kaona as the method for how the Haggadah is performed, and that this a question of matzah and marah in front of everyone is connected to that. Also, we find the Daf Kuf Tezayim Beit, if you had a chance to see that Gemara now, it's a complex Gemara, we'll have to say more about. But the Gemara discusses at least the possibility, we have to see what the conclusion is, but at least the possibility that a Summa, a person who was blind, would be putter from the Haggadah. And connected with that discussion, so the Gemara understands that that would impact him being able to be motzi other people. So if you have a household, the Gemara talks about Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshes, who themselves were blind, and the question is asked, how were they conducting the Seder in their households? Assumption being, and that's the language of the Rashbam over there, right, that they would have to be motzi, their family members, b'chovasa, they would have to, sounds like Shemei Kaona, recite this mitzvah on their behalf, so how could that work if presumably they are pater? So these gemaras sound like Shemei Kaona is a method, or maybe the primary method, for how the Seder can be conducted. And that's also the impression you have from a few Rishonim. The Knesset HaGedolah quotes the Tshuvas HaRe'im that way. And it's also the impression that we get from the Tosfos that we saw many months ago, Tosfos and Tzadi Tesim at Beis. As you recall, Tosfos there raised the question of maybe we shouldn't require Dalit Kosos for everybody. Maybe we should be able to have one set of Dalit Kosos just by the head of the household, and that should be enough. And the premise, which was disputed, remember it was a topic of the Brisker Rav's discussion and others, the idea that Shemei Kaona could work by Dalit Kosos doesn't seem to be so logical, because Dalit Kosos is a mitzvah of drinking. Where does Shemei Kaona come in? Matzah, you're going to have Shemei Kaona? Doesn't work. You have to actually eat the matzah yourself. How does Shemei Kaona even make sense? So what was the premise? The premise that it could make sense is that if we see that really the nature of Dalit Kosos is that it's for brachos al hakos, that it was Kiddush and Haggadah and Halal and benching al hakos, so maybe if you listen to somebody else make that bracha ala kos, so then that kos comes with you. Just like Kiddush. That was Tosfos' explicit premise, that just like on a regular Friday night, we can recite Kiddush for one person, for everyone else, and only that one person has the cup, and still, that's good enough. So too, maybe all the Dalit Kosos and Pesach night could work that way too. But clearly he's assuming that the Haggadah itself would work through Shemei Kaona. The question is just, could the kos also count through Shemaya Kohen? Or is the kos coming from a different halacha? But its premise certainly seems to be that the Haggadah itself could be done through Shemaya Kohen. And that relationship was also one of the sources that pointed that women are also obligated in Haggadah. That whole question is that not a mitzvah seisha as man grama. So since the Gemara tells us explicitly they're obligated in Dalakosos, and according to this angle that the Kosos are specifically connected to the recitations, so it would be necessary to assume they're obligated in Haggadah too. So all of this seems to indicate that Haggadah can be, or maybe even does most commonly, operate through Shemaya Kohen. So far so good? Make sense? So there's some details that we have to figure out if that's indeed true. And it's also interesting, this is going to connect to the larger question of the relationship between Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now when it comes to Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, we know that's a daily obligation, actually a twice daily obligation. And Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim somehow builds on that for this one night a year. We've touched upon a little bit what are the differences between Zechira and Sipur. The Chassam Sofer in this same tshuva, there's a lot to say in this tshuva, and has many references to a lot of different things. This is Siman Tesvav in the Tshuva Sarach Chaim. So the Chassam Sofer considers that he works off the premise that the Seder is functioning through Shemaya Kohanah. And he says, Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, the daily mitzvah, that might be different. Not that you can't do Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim through Shemaya Kohanah, but he says maybe it doesn't even need it, because since the mitzvah is phrased as Zechira, so maybe the very nature is that just thinking about it is enough. Now that gets complicated, because like we discussed, so Kiddush is a mitzvah of speech as we understand it, and Kiddush is also phrased in the Torah as Zachar is a mashab of Sakacho, and yet we assume that that requires Shemaya Kohanah. And in general, it's a little tricky to have a consistent understanding of Zechira throughout the Torah. If we assume there are maybe six mitzvahs of Zechira, that itself is a little bit of a debate, how many mitzvahs to actually count that are about Zechira. We commonly say six, but there could be as few as four or as many as nine, depending on what you consider to count. So having a consistent interpretation of what Zachar means is difficult. And in the context of Amalek, so we know that that has to be verbalized. That's the one detail that the Gemara actually insists upon, even though there are other details that we assume to go with Amalek. But the Gemara in Megillah understands that it has to at least be verbalized. And there, the Gemara says it's because it's a double language of Zachar and also Lo Sishkach. So that's what tells us to interpret it as a verbalized remembrance. So to have a consistent theory is a little bit difficult, but in the context of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim, so the Chassam Sofer suggests that maybe it also has to be out loud, but maybe it can be out loud through somebody else, and that can also be good enough for you to hear somebody else's verbalizing Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim. And you won't even need Shemaya Kohanah, because that's the way the mitzvah is phrased. That it's all about Zechira. So again, why is that different than Kiddush? Or we're assuming you do need Shemaya Kohanah? It's a good question. But that's the premise he discusses in that shuv. So as far as the Haggadah is concerned, where the Chassam Sofer, like these others, the Knesset HaGadolah and the Tosfos and the Pashtus of our sugya, is assuming that we are working with a Shemaya Kohanah framework. So does this work with the Beis HaLevi? This is a discussion that Rav Asher Weiss takes up in his Sefer Am Safed. So what about the Beis HaLevi's issue that Birchas Kohanim cannot work through Shamei Kohanim. So does that fit with an understanding that it's working for the Haggadah? Well, one issue, we have our question of all the other elements that come together with the Haggadah, which seem to be necessary, right? And the impact of the Gemara in Kuf Tes Zayin about Suma sounds like being able to utilize the matzah and point to it is a crucial component to the mitzvah. So does that mean that the Haggadah itself shouldn't be able to work through Shemei Kohanim according to the Beis Halevi? So he notes that one question you could ask about the Beis Halevi, the Beis Halevi says that Shemei Kohanim can't work for Birkas Kohanim because it has to be with a loud voice. And Shemei Kohanim, maybe it counts as speech, but it's quiet speech. So he raises the question, he says, couldn't you say that that cancels out all Shemei Kohanim? Because the Gemara says, in the context of Kriya Shema, but we understand it to be true by all recitations, that there is a minimum volume level. And that minimum volume level is, you have to be mashmiya la'oznov. You have to at least speak loudly enough that you yourself can hear. So, doesn't that suggest that it's not just Birchas Kohanim where there is this requisite loudness that Shemei Kohanim doesn't count for, but all mitzvahs of speech do have a minimum volume threshold, and Shemei Kohanim is not going to make it for that? So what do you think about that question? Does that trouble you? Ari?
If we're assuming that it just gets you the... I assume the base lady was saying that Shemei Kohanim means that you get the most basic package of what Ania entails, which is just above the decibel level to make it audible.
Okay.
The higher elevated package, which requires more payments.
The premium package. The
premium package, exactly. Yeah. To make it hurt.
Always got to pay extra. Yeah.
Exactly. So it would be... It should work for all other men, so I don't fully understand.
We were saying by default, you're saying that it's got to mean something. So if it means something, it's got to mean at least itself. And what he's, with the Beis Halevi, is saying is, okay, it means at least itself, but not more than that. So that could be. I think you could also say, maybe a little bit more in terms of its details, that you could say that the halacha of Mashmiya La'azna, that actually just reflects what you were saying before, about that all mitzvahs of speech require these two components. That the ultimate purpose is that you should hear it. And the speaking is a means to an end. So that halacha of the requirement of being mashmiya la'aznav, that shows you that that's the point. That we always want that at least you should hear it yourself. So the one speaking should have at least enough volume that he hears himself talking. Because that's the goal. The goal is that he should hear it. But that doesn't have to carry over to the listener, because for the listener's purpose, he just needs to hear it from someone. So if the original speaker is saying it loud enough for him to hear, then that goal has been accomplished. So it's still true that Shemei Kohanim could work with that condition, according to everybody, because that condition is just there to make sure that somebody hears it. So I don't know if that necessarily has to bother us so much. But the answer that he gives to that question, that Rav Asher gives to that question, is to revise the understanding of the Beis Halevi along the lines of what we mentioned, that many Brisker's farm also have this revision, we mentioned it the other day, that the Beis Halevi never meant to say that no extraneous factors, no extra circumstances can come along with Shemei Kohanim. He would acknowledge that Kiddush Al HaKos works, and that the kosher Megillah that the Baal Kori has transfers over to everyone else. He agrees with all that. What he was talking about in terms of Birchas Kohanim is that there's a specific, just structure to the mitzvah that doesn't lend itself to Shomei Ka'onin. And that is that you have to actually communicate to other people. The Kol Rom is not there to set a volume level. It's there for a practical reason. You have to actually communicate the sound to the tzibur. And if you're not doing that, so then you don't have the mitzvah. So it's not a question of whether extra conditions can be transferred to the listener. It's that the nature of this mitzvah is clearly something more than just speaking. It's about actually communicating, and the listener is not going to be actually communicating. So, if you take that understanding of the Beis Halev, asks Rav Asher, well, hold on a second. What is the mitzvah of Haggadah? As we see from many dinim that we know about, but also specifically on Daf Kufta Zayin Amud Aleph, right, what is the basic format of Haggadah? As the name itself indicates, either the name Haggadah or Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. What's that mitzvah all about? Is it only about speech? What does the very structure demand of us? Right? Yeah, lady?
You got it to Lubincha. Yeah, somebody has to, whoever that is, obviously it's a part of the mitzvah as well.
Okay, so it would seem like here you have a mitzvah which is very much, even more explicitly than Berachas Kohanim, about this communication. That's all the versions of the name convey that. Haggadah, Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's all about speaking. It's all about telling. So shouldn't that have the same issue? And we see from the Mishnah that this idea of back and forth is so crucial that even if a person is alone, in a situation that's unfortunately been more common the past two Pesachim, through Corona, if a person is alone, he still has to use this format. And certainly, ideally, he should be actually communicating with somebody else, whoever it is. If he doesn't have children, his wife, or whoever else might be there. So it seems like that's very much true about Haggadah also. So, could this factor still be squared with the Beis Halevi? The Beis Halevi is correct that Shomei Ka'ona can't work if the mitzvah is about communicating. Can that coexist with the idea that Haggadah is also about communicating and apparently uses Shomei Ka'ona? What would you say? Is there a way to... Is there a way to understand that? Is there a way to reconcile that? Or is that going to combust? It can't coexist. Ari?
I thought the communication aspect of the Haggadah is to facilitate an understanding of visualizing yourself as the view of Egypt. And also to give thanks to Kadosh Baruch Hu for all the peace and the oaks. So that doesn't necessarily require a back and forth dialogue setup. Rather, even if you're just thinking about it through Shomei Ka'ona,
okay, so I'm understanding you correctly that you're saying that even by Haggadah and by Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, these two phrases both have that same connotation, it's not really that the mitzvah is to communicate. It's that the mitzvah is to remember, and an expanded form of Zechiras Yetzias Mitzrayim that requires a certain level of detail and engagement, and that engagement happens through this back and forth. So it's more about using this Socratic method of telling the story that's there to expand the mitzvah of Zechira, but it's not really for the purpose of the listener. It's for making that a more expressed type of mitzvah. Right?
If that was about Israel.
Yes, I guessed.
Yeah. If that's the idea, then technically, if we're going to go with the means to the end model, and couldn't you argue that if someone can still get the same ends to a different means, technically should be the same, right? If you have the ideas before, but then after something, or like, through a picture book, not actually verbalizing anything.
So that's a fair question. It actually goes to the whole, that question really could be asked about everything about Pesach night. It really could be asked about every mitzvah in the Torah, which is maybe what the Seder night is also representing, which is an interesting kind of meta theme. But that in general, so we have this by mitzvahs overall, that we have an idea that mitzvahs are supposed to bring about a certain goal, and yet we're not trusted just to get that goal by ourselves, but that the whole structure of the mitzvahs is that we do this with the understanding that this will hopefully bring about something. So, and that's one of the major themes in Pesach night, with the whole idea of the Korban Pesach and not breaking the bones, the Sefer HaChinuch commenting there that this is because the way we act is supposed to impact on how we think. So it's probably true for all of mitzvot, and it's probably true especially for the Seder, and the Seder is representing our whole relationship with mitzvot. But that being true, it's still the case that within mitzvot, there are some mitzvot that are for their own sake, and there are some mitzvot that are there kind of as a accessory. So, and like we said with Shemei Ka'one, it could be that that reflects the fact that even every act of speech, every mitzvah of speech, has one part that and one part the other. And that there's an actual mitzvah yourself to hear it, and the speaking, which is a means to an end to hear it. So, within the idea of Haggadah, so we know that we have a mitzvah to do this. The question is, how are the parts assigned? So it could be that we know that there's a mitzvah to say something. The question is, how is that mitzvah formulated? Is it formulated that it's about saying it, or it's about the impact of saying it? And when we know we have this detail of engaging in conversation with somebody else, of Yigadat Lebincha and of Sipur, so that tells us that it's about some kind of interactive speech. But that interactive speech, is that because we need to communicate it? Or is that because that changes the way we're doing it? And by doing it derech shelu tshuva, by doing it in this interactive kind of Socratic format, so that creates a new environment to the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Now there's no question that ideally you would actually communicate. But does that mean that that's the whole reason why you're saying it out loud? Or you're saying it out loud in this question and answer format because that changes how you do it? Which, as we'll see some more examples, this actually opens up all kinds of questions about who's benefiting. So for example, there is a question that comes up quite frequently. Let's say you have children visiting their parents in the Seder night. And let's say parents live in America, and the children live in Israel. And they came to America for Pesach, to visit the parents. So it's the second Seder night. The Israeli children are not really obligated in the second Seder night. But they're visiting their parents, so they're there at the table. So can they ask the Manishtana? The nature of the question is, who is the subject of this mitzvah? Is it for the askers, or is it for the answerers? So what if one is obligating the mitzvah that night and one isn't? How does that factor in? Rav Yitzchok Zilberstein, who always has fascinating scenarios, so in his Haggadah he has that question, which you can find in others for him as well. So that case isn't so fascinating because it comes up. That's pretty likely. But then he always has this fascinating kind of outlandish formulation. So he adds there also, it could also come up if your Seder table happens to cross the international dateline. So you have some people on one side and some people on the other side who are holding in Pesach and some who aren't. That's a lot less likely. But the idea of children visiting their parents when they have different rules about Yom Tov Sheni, that's a little bit more practical. Hi. You would think that. So it does seem to indicate that, and maybe it does answer that question as far as the Antiv Sheni, although it doesn't totally settle who the beneficiary is. Because if we know that the Torah tells us to do it this way, so still leaves room for the question, okay, but are you doing it that way to educate them, in which case, despite the fact that they're not obligated to mitzvot, it might still be what the mitzvah is to educate your child, just like, for example, the whole mitzvah of chinuch, to the extent that it's min haTorah. There is a mitzvah of chinuch min haTorah also. So even though the beneficiary is not themselves obligated in mitzvot, but the mitzvah is to train the child, so is it in that spirit? Or maybe no, maybe it's there really for you to do it this way, and that's going to dictate its terms. But it doesn't necessarily have to be compared to Berachas Kohanim, where it's about communicating specifically. So that's another avenue he considers. Ultimately, he points out that that's still not going to fit 100% as far as differentiating it between Berachas Kohanim, because you could say similar things about Berachas Kohanim too. So ultimately, his conclusion there is to reject the Beis HaLevi, at least as far as this is concerned. Now, you could reject the Beis HaLevi with all due respect to our yeshiva and his legacy here, but the Rebbe's great grandfather, I don't mean to reject him personally, but to reject the position of the Beis HaLevi on this issue. So there are two ways to say differently, as he notes. One is, it's really three ways, right? We saw that, we're assuming anyway, that the majority opinion is not in line with the Beis HaLevi, but that's even before redefining it in this more limited way. But even within the more limited reading of the Beis HaLevi, so there clearly are many other perspectives, first of all, because there were those who felt that Berachas Kohanim could work through Shemaya Kohana. That was the view of Rav Shlomo Mivilna, the brother of Tzal Mivilna. So that would already seem to disagree with the Beis HaLevi's whole premise. And even if you agree that it doesn't work for Berachas Kohanim, so the Beis HaLevi's colleague in Velazhin, his co-Rosh Yeshiva in Velazhin, Benitziv has a tshuva where he also says it doesn't work to have Berachas Kohanim and Shemaya Kohana. But he has a whole different reason there, based on Yerushalmi. It says tefillah as a whole, we don't use Shemaya Kohana for, and this is a type of tefillah. So all of those alternative theories would seem to disagree with the premise of the Beis HaLevi. So maybe it's not going to shtick. Maybe it's not going to work to have the Beis HaLevi and his theory coexist with the Haggadah and Shemaya Kohana. However, as he also notes, that it could be that despite all of these many sources that explicitly have Shemaya Kohana in the context of the Seder, such as the Knesset Sagadola and the Sam Sofer and the Tosfos and others, but it could be that maybe the Seder is not about Shemaya Kohana. And maybe that's not really what's going on. Well, what about the fact that we have these two Gemaras, the Daf apart that we're looking at now? The issue about the Omer Haggadah and the Profs on Kuf Tezvav, and the Summa issue on Kuf Tezayin, where we find about issues that seem to emanate from Shemaya Kohana considerations. So is it possible to nonetheless assume that it's not Shemaya Kohana that is functioning at the Seder? So the truth is, you probably could say yes, you could say a different way. And you could say that what's happening at the Seder is that if the mitzvah is formulated as Sipur, and it's formulated as a conversation, so the nature of a mitzvah like that, that's about a conversation, is that not everyone is playing the same part. So you have some people doing the asking and some people doing the answering. And they're all partaking in the conversation. Not because of any fancy Shemaya Kohana mechanism, but simply because that's the nature of what the mitzvah is. The mitzvah is to have this conversation. And if you partake in the conversation, you are a part of it. He notes over there, this could perhaps be compared to Lashon Hara. Now, when it comes to Lashon Hara, so we understand that there's the prohibition that applies to the speaker and to the listener. So the truth is, the listener's role is actually a whole distinct role, and that's something that we hope to sometime find time for in our parak, because it's actually a Gemara in Arbei Pesachim too. Maybe this will also be a June topic to fill in a little bit more. The Kabbalah Lashon Hara really has its own sources, but even without that, so we would assume that the issue for the listener is not simply Lifteiver, is not simply that he's facilitating the speakers of Aaron, but that he's a part of it. The issue is the conversation, is the Lashon Hara conversation, and all the participants are a part of it. And it's not because of any kind of extra mechanism that connects the listener to the speaker. Now, if that's so, we still have to account for the fact that we have these Gemaras indicating that we need to have a Bar Chiyuva, and most specifically the Gemara about Suma, which is indicating that we need to have somebody who's obligated. So that sounds like a Shamaya Kona consideration. Again, maybe not. Now, maybe that's the nature of the mitzvah, that the conversation has to be at least led by somebody who is obligated in the mitzvah in order for it to be that fulfillment. But it doesn't have to be tapping into Shamaya Kona. It can be just tapping into itself, that that's what the mitzvah is. So the conversation has to be led by somebody who's obligated, because and it is a mitzvah. But it doesn't necessarily indicate that we're dealing with Shamaya Ka'ona functionality. This is a little similar, he makes the comparison, similar to what we talked about the other day. The question came up about shofar, right? That the whole premise, which that is a Shamaya Ka'ona detail, that why is it that we assume that Shamaya Ka'ona should require that the speaker be a Bar Chiyuva? Why does that didn't exist in the first place? And we noted the comparison to shofar, that by shofar, according to many Rishonim, the mitzvah is shmiah. And then the question was, so if it's shmiah, why can't you have a tape recorder playing the sound? Why can't you have a robot playing the shofar? Why do we care that the one blowing the shofar has to be obligated in the mitzvah? And it's something which the Sfarim struggle with, but they basically explain that the mitzvah is to hear not just anything, but to hear a kol shel chiyuv, or a kol shel mitzvah, as Sadeh Shrekes Aryeh explained it. So apparently here also, the idea is to engage in a conversation of mitzvah. Now there, we have to also understand exactly what engaging means, because we can acknowledge that it doesn't mean that everyone has the same parts. So some people are asking the questions and some people are giving the answers and they don't have to say each other's lines. But what about the people present who aren't even doing that? So we don't assume that everyone has to say all the parts, practically speaking. Although there are those who recommend it, that you should maybe quietly to yourself say the whole Haggadah while others are saying it more loudly. But presumably, Al Pidin, we don't actually require that. That it's enough to have the head of the household say his parts, and maybe others say their parts, and Manashtana and the like. And there might be people at the table who are not saying anything. So this is something that's discussed in Poskim, for example, from Bezalel Stern and his Shuvas Betzel HaChachma, discusses if we have a mitzvah, if you got it to the Bincha. So very often you'll have a father with children who is visiting his parents or his in-laws over the Seder, and he's not doing the talking. His father or his father-in-law is doing the talking. So is he still going to be in fulfillment of the mitzvah of Yigayat al-Mincha? So one way or another, presumably yes. Because even if you want to be machmir, that everyone should read to themselves the whole Haggadah, you're still not doing that in an interactive way. Not going to have every person saying both parts and interacting with someone else. That's not practically possible. So one way or another, that works. So either it works because that's all a part of how the conversation happens, or it works because maybe Shamaya Kona, and therefore it doesn't require the people present to say any of it. They could listen to both the questions and the answers, all being from others, then through Shamaya Ka'ona, that's still effective. Okay, so far so good. Everybody with me? So one of the questions, just to also consider, I'll just mention this briefly, But the whole issue of the Summa, we still have to explore a little bit more about what that means practically. But the issue that the Gemara has about the Summa, so if you saw the Gemara in Kuf Tezayin and Bebeis, so essentially, why would it be that a Summa should be exempt from the mitzvah of Haggadah? What's the issue? All right?
As far as the requirement that the Haggadah be said, where is
that? Okay, the language of that, right? And that seems to be separate and apart. And if you had a chance to see sort of the last minute this morning, with a request for a little more sources, I sent you the Ritva and Kedusha and Zatostas in Rosh Hashanah, a number of other sources that talk about how this fits into the larger question of Summa and Mitzvos, that there is the position of Rabbi Yehuda, which we do not seem to paskin like, though it's a discussion in Rishonim too. I remember when I first discovered that I was having a conversation with Rav Shachter many years ago, and I asked him, working off the premise that Summa is Pater from Mitzvos, the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and he quickly noted that we don't paskin that way. And it took me aback, well, because there's such an extensive literature in the Rishonim and the Achronim around the position of Rabbi Yehuda. It's a topic of much discussion. It gets hard to clarify what's actually practical and what's not. But this view of Rabbi Yehuda and the Gemara, which all the Rishonim and Achronim get involved in clarifying, that a Summa is Pater from Mitzvahs in general, which we don't assume in practice. So this Gemara seems to be coming from a different angle. It seems to be saying that specifically within Haggadah there is a issue. So the issue, as Ari notes, is the word Zeh. And the Gemara draws the connection to Ben Sora and Mora. And there we find an exclusion for a Summa. And there's many, many exclusions in the Parsha of Ben Sora and Mora. It's a part of its very nature. But there, because it's supposed to say B'neinu Zeh. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean there's a Gezeirah Shava? Zeh means the same thing in both places? Or is that just teaching us that that's what the impact of Zeh is? That you're supposed to be able to see it and point to it? So that's not 100% clear. There's room to analyze that question of what exactly is the relationship between the Zeh of Ben Sora Mora and the Zeh of the Seder, and the Gemara ultimately makes a distinction that here it's necessary, so it doesn't necessarily exclude anything else beyond it, while in the case of Ben Sora Mora it seems to be extraneous, and that's why it's invoked for something. But what is it telling us practically? It's telling us, it seems like it's saying that the mitzvah requires this element of being able to connect to the prop, of being able to connect to the matzah, and Summa is unable to do so. So what does that mean? Does that mean that he's putter fundamentally? Or does it mean that technically he's chayiv, especially if we assume he's chayiv in mitzvahs overall? So really he should be chayiv. It's just that there is an onus here, that the mitzvah requires him to do something that he's not able to do. So if he's not able to do it, okay, so he's off the hook. But the mitzvah in its essence maybe is applicable to him. And then maybe the pasuk changes that, or maybe it doesn't. So this has an impact on the whole question of being motzi somebody else. So to tie this in to our recent discussions about Sfiras HaOmer, which now is also the parsha this week, and we're in the still the middle of Sfira. So we have this notion that we talked about the possibility of Shemei Kaona by Tziras HaOmer. And we understand that for that to work, if it does work, you'd have to listen from somebody who is obligated. So what if you have somebody who forgot at night of Sfira? So he's no longer counting with a bracha. Could he nonetheless count on your behalf? And parenthetically, you might think, how often does this come up? Well, this could be the rabbi's salvation. And one of the rabbi's nightmares, in addition to losing the shtaros from Mechiras Chametz or alienating the tzibur with his political views or whatever else, so among the many hazards, professional hazards of the rabbinate, is what happens if he misses a night of sphira. So everyone else misses a night of sphira and just mumble and no one will know, or listen to other people's brachos. But the rabbi has to publicly count shul for everyone to hear. So what's he going to do? Going to have to announce to everyone, sorry, I'm out this year. So that's an interesting question of itself. But there is the suggestion, some have, that maybe he still can count. Because if his purpose is to be motzi the tzibur, which is itself a little questionable, but if that's the purpose, so maybe he can still do that. Well, how could he do that? He's not doing it himself. He's not mechuyev b'davar. So you'd say, no, it's not that he's not mechuyev b'davar. He is mechuyev b'davar. It's just that he has an impediment. He's just not able to do it, practically speaking, because if we understand, either way, in understanding what the issue was missing a day, if you say that sphira is all one big mitzvah, or you say, like Rav Soloveitchik, you need the structure to build onto. In both understandings, you say he is obligated in sphira, he just doesn't have the context to do it anymore. So maybe we should say he is mechuyev b'davar, and maybe that's similar to arvus. I already asked me yesterday about arvus, that we say that even though you have to be obligated in the mitzvah, but somebody who went to shul in Rosh Hashanah and heard the shofar, he can still blow shofar in the nursing home for people who couldn't come to shul. And he can still read the Megillah after he's heard it in the morning for people in the hospital. So why is that? Don't we say that you have to be obligated? You're not obligated to hear it twice. So the Gemara says that's because of arvus. That's because of the idea of kol Yisrael arevim zeh bezeh, that I am obligated to help you out. So if you aren't able to get to shul to hear the shofar and I can help you, that keeps my chiyuv alive. So if I'm somebody who's technically obligated in shofar, so then I can blow the shofar for you even though I already heard it. So maybe this is coming from the other direction. That if I'm somebody who's technically obligated in sphira, so I just can't do it right now for myself because I broke the link, I'm missing a day, but you did it, and I can do it on your behalf, so then maybe that allows me to even recite a bracha and to say sphira on your behalf. So then maybe that could have worked for the summa too. And maybe if the summa had people at his table, like Rav Yosef and Rav Sheshes, maybe he could recite the Haggadah on their behalf. Maybe he's somebody who technically should be obligated and is just impeded by the fact that he can't carry out this detail. Now again, maybe the Pasuk is coming to change that. But that's a whole question, how to understand what that Gemara is. One contemporary Sefer suggested along the following lines that we spoke about earlier in the week, about the halacha of kalaroi lebila ein bila so makeves, the halacha that if you have a mitzvah that has a lechachila and a b'di'eved fashion, so you can get away without the detail, but the detail has to at least be possible. So in the case of this halacha that you have to point to the matzah, it's clearly not really ma'akev. Right, let's say somebody were to just close his eyes at the time when he was saying the Haggadah. Would you say he wasn't Yotzei? No. So if you can live without that detail, so then why should it affect the blind man's chiyuv? If it's not so crucial, so then he should be obligated without it. So perhaps you have a structure similar to that idea that it has to at least be possible. And why is that true? Why do you have that din? Kolaroi lebila. So some understand because that says something about the way you're doing the mitzvah. That if you're doing the mitzvah in a way that this detail that's ideal is impossible, then the action is fundamentally flawed in some way. That when the Torah has this detail, it means to say it should at least be in a fashion that it's possible to do that detail. So therefore, maybe the issue is that the mitzvah is being performed in a flawed way. And therefore, for others to be yotzei through that mitzvah is going to be compromised. So that's something that we'll have to try to understand a little bit further, because there are a lot of aspects to that, what exactly it means practically. So we'll have to explore that. So maybe we'll just review what we said, and we'll dive in again tomorrow. Maybe if we have a little bit more time for the parsha, we'll try to say a little bit more about this, so that we'll be able to stay on track. So just to quickly recap, what did we speak about? So we talked about the whole foundational issue of Shemaya Kaone and how can that be applied to our Gemara and to our topic of the Seder. So we saw, regarding the Seder, it sounds like that Shemaya Kaone is in operation and can be in operation. And from the Gemara about the Omer Haggadah maybe being the only one who needs to have the props in front of him, and the Gemara in Kuf Tazayin about the Suma, where the reference is to him being Motzi others, it sounds like Shemaya Kaone works, and that's also the implication of the Tosfos about Dalek Tosfos at the beginning of the parrot, and the way the Knesset Gedola quotes from the Reim, and the way the Chassam Sofer understands it as well. And we noted that the Chassam Sofer also posed the question whether Zechira Sisiyas Mitzrayim functions differently than Sipur Sisiyas Mitzrayim. Maybe Zechira Sisiyas Mitzrayim doesn't even need Shemaya Kaone, and that was also something to explore. So then we posed the question, in light of the Beis Halevi's position that Shemaya Kaone doesn't work for Brechas Kohanim, so how does it work for the Haggadah? Seems to have the same kind of issues. And we noted, Rav Asher Weiss raised the question about how it is that we could ever have the condition that Mashmiya La'ozno, that you have to be able to hear what you're saying for a mitzvah of speech. Shouldn't that make everything like Brechas Kohanim? And we suggested the approach that no, that halacha specifically is because there is always a need for the recitation to be heard. And this way, the speaker is hearing himself, and anyone else could potentially also hear him. But we don't need to have the listener do that also, as long as somebody is making it audible for that detail specifically. And then we considered, in light of the idea that redefines the Beis Halevi's issue, that it's simply about Brechas Kohanim requiring communication. So what about the Haggadah? The Haggadah also requires communication, as its name indicates, Haggadah and Sipur Sias Mitzrayim. So as he discusses there, the Menachas Asher, it could be that that's not actually what the mitzvah is about. It's not actually that you have to communicate it. It is that you should be speaking it in a way that is patterned after communication and ideally would involve communication, but that's not actually the goal. The goal is that you should remember it in such a interactive Socratic way. And we discussed some of the issues that come up in terms of whether the mitzvah is really the mitzvah of the parent or of the child. For example, what if one's holding from Yantav Sheni and one isn't? And that goes to that issue a little bit. But still, it doesn't fully work with the Beis Halevi for various technical reasons. And maybe the Beis Halevi indeed is not accepted la halacha for various other alternative theories. Maybe we do have Berachas Kohanim with Shemaya Kaone, or maybe like the Nesiv, that's not the reason why we can't, etc., etc. But then, as he noted, it could be that we could say differently from all of the above and say that it's not Shemaya Kaone that is what's in operation at the Seder, and these Gemaras don't necessarily have to use that path either, but is that the nature of the mitzvah is to have a conversation. And therefore, that involves different parties doing different things, just like Shemiyas Lashon Hara, and it doesn't require everyone to be saying the same parts. And we noted practically, it doesn't necessarily require everyone to be saying any part, because you could have people at the Seder who have their own personal obligation, their fathers with children at their father's or in-law's house, and yet they're not saying everything. So either that's because there's a conversation that they're still a part of, or because the Shemaya Kaone is operating on their behalf as well. And then we considered how the issue of Summa fits into this, and the idea that he's missing this ability to point to the matzah, and how exactly that connects to the issue of Ben Sarer Mora, and does that mean that he should really be disconnected from the mitzvah completely? Or maybe he is obligating the mitzvah, it's just that he functionally can't perform it because he's missing this element. And we'll discuss that possibility, that if that was just the case, he should maybe be able to remote see others, and maybe that would be true about somebody who is out of the game for Sfiras HaOmer, but is being motzi someone else. Maybe there's a harvest component there, but that doesn't seem to be the case. And we discussed also the suggestion that maybe the mitzvah action is fundamentally missing something if this element of pointing to the matzah, which isn't crucial, but should at least be possible. If it's not possible, maybe that says something about the tzura of the mitzvah. So that's something we're going to try to explore a drop more, and to segue from that to the other topics on the daf, either tomorrow or as soon as we have an opportunity. All right, so we'll stop there. As far as mincha, we're good, everyone staying for mincha? Okay, so we have any volunteers? Any volunteer? Okay, any other volunteers? Have mincha for us? All right.